Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:15 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is November 13th. I thought we'd kick off and look at the TED spread. It's not something that's really been a major topic of conversation for at least a decade. It was all the rage to look at the OAS spread and the TED spread during the financial crisis because it was the financial sector was the epicenter of risk during the subprime meltdown. But what we're seeing in the repo sector right now is certainly worth monitoring. Whether it represents an immediate risk, I think, is rather questionable, but whether it represents a medium-term risk is probably more likely. When we look at the TED spread, that is the difference between 3-month LIBOR and 3-month Treasury paper. So it's currently at 34 basis points. It was at about 70 back in 2016. When we then go back and look at more history, well, then we can see there has been a succession of higher reaction lows over this year. Generally speaking, if we just simply take the mean values, that it's usually during times of market stress that when the spread gets above about 60 basis points, that we have to be alert to change it. Well, the chances are that we've had some market stress to get it up to those levels. Then, of course, there are going to be occasions when it doesn't stop there and pops on the upside, like we saw in 2007. The fact that it is continuing to trend higher here over the course of the last 3 or 4 months is representative of the fact that the Federal Reserve has been adding liquidity. The reason they've been adding liquidity is because liquidity in the repo market evaporated. Historically, banks have had abundant liquidity that they were willing to and had the ability to deploy in the repo market to capture arbitrages. That's no longer possible because they are committed to holding Tier 1 capital. They have to hold a certain amount of it, then they're very constrained in exactly what they're allowed to trade. Prop trading desks have been closed. And the result is that the repo market is less liquid, and the Federal Reserve has had to further open up its balance sheet. If we start to think about what is it that the Federal Reserve had been doing previously, well, originally they would only have been printing money in order to increase the size of the balance sheet in line with economic growth to ensure that there is ample liquidity to promote growth. That is basic central banking 101. Then, with the response to the credit crisis, they started buying bonds, they started buying treasuries, and then later started buying mortgages. Well, what that effectively did was lower the credit quality of the portfolio that the Federal Reserve is holding. Now, what they have had to do was to further increase the range of what they're willing to accept as collateral and move out into the repo market. Well, of course, the repo market is, there are two important facts about it. The first is that it is generally an interest rate matching way, mechanism for banks to move money around just on an overnight basis. Therefore, it's larger than the Fed funds rate. It's also very international in nature. It tends to attract deposits from around the world because of the USA's more favorable interest rate environment right now. The fact that there is illiquidity in the market suggests that there are other markets that are absorbing that cash. There's the additional point, of course, that the Federal Reserve is only half of the equation. The U.S. Treasury might be the other half. They are printing a boatload of debt, and that is sucking liquidity out of the market as well. But the most important point is that the liquidity measures that the Federal Reserve has had to engage in are almost twice as large to date as what would have originally have been considered normal for the banking sector to provide. Historically, banks have had a cushion of about $150 billion to play and to arbitrage in the repo market. Now the Federal Reserve has had to add $300 billion to its balance sheet in the space of a very short period of time. Well, then of course, if we look at the ECB's balance sheet, well, they are involved in quantitative easing, and they're adding an additional $20 billion to the size of the balance sheet on a monthly basis. That is relatively inconsequential relative to the size of the ECB's balance sheet, but it's certainly not contracting. Now, if we think about the fact that we can aggregate the balances of all of these central banks, redenominate them into dollars, well, what we're then presented with is this rebound that's occurred since the beginning of October, very much in line with the quantity of cash that has been created by the Federal Reserve. When we then think about global liquidity, well, we are seeing active engagement by central banks to increase the quantity of liquidity outstanding. This is, I think, a rather important point. The quantity outstanding today is around 19.6 trillion. It is still below the peak posted at the beginning of 2018, but it is not making new lows. In fact, I think there is a rational argument to be made that what we're seeing is some support starting to come through, and there is the scope here for the total size of central bank balance sheets internationally to continue to rise. The other factor that tends to inhibit the size of that or the total quantity of assets on central banks is the strength of the dollar. The dollar was relatively unchanged in here today, but it has bounced from the region of the trend mean. That it was the minimum requirement to suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. It's been pretty quiet over the balance of this week so far, but as long as it is holding that sequence of higher reaction lows, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to higher to lateral ranging, considering that it pulled back from the 100 level on the last occasion. Then there is the potential that the next time it breaks further on the upside, it will eventually pull back, or excuse me, will exceed 100 before subsequently setting another higher reaction low. That's one of the more important points when we look at the fact that the dollar has been so steady. Against a background where the Federal Reserve is increasing the size of its balance sheet in an aggressive manner, $300 billion in the space of about 6 or 7 weeks is an aggressive easing. Then cutting 75 basis points off the Fed funds rate, the fact that the US government is running a massive fiscal deficit, all of those factors should generally be considered to be negative for the dollar. It's the problem, of course, is that growth elsewhere is slower. And there is the real potential that Germany is, in fact, in recession. I think that considering the lag that we have from central bank actions, that we're probably at a trough in global growth, that there is the scope for a return to more of a synchronized global economic expansion over the course of the next 6 months. But, of course, the breakout that we've seen in stock markets is pricing that in. And the S&P 500 finished positive on the day. The Dow Jones was in positive territory for most of the day, and part of the reason for that was because it's being led higher by Disney. Disney was up over 5% in here today, and that was in direct response to the fact that they have garnered 10 million subscribers for their new streaming service that launched today. This is a very emphatic resumption of the uptrend. We've had the very clear breakout from a lengthy range. We've had a period of consolidation above it, and now it is broken on the upside. What we've also seen in here today is a number of news stories talking about Google, Amazon, and Apple. So Apple and Goldman Sachs have got a partnership for consumer credit. So that's an example of Apple attempting to move into the consumer credit market to try and garner some additional value from its ecosystem. Google is trying to expand its ecosystem, and it is getting patient data from Ascension, which is the second largest health provider. At the same time, they are also engaged in an attempt to try and garner even more data from Fitbit. They've just bought Fitbit, so that is another example of a market where they have potentially got access to health data, at least our fitness data. Then they're also partnering with Citigroup on in terms of consumer credit. Then Amazon and Berkshire and JP Morgan announced earlier in the year that they want to tackle the healthcare market as well. Now, the one thing that all of these markets have in common is data. They are obviously trying to garner additional value from their ability to parse the data on a very big data and cloud-friendly environment. Well, Apple continues to extend its advance. It's somewhat overextended in the short term, but this has been a very impressive advance in here over the course of about the last 6 weeks. Google is still pretty much in the region of the upper side of its range, but it does look like it is breaking on the upside in here. Amazon, on the other hand, has been a little flat-footed in terms of capturing the value outstanding in the data market, particularly in view of the fact that they were one of the first movers in terms of supplying a cloud platform with Amazon Web Services. The share was down $25 in here today, and what I find particularly interesting here is that it is struggling to sustain a move back above the trend mean. That's not especially encouraging. When we then compare that with the other rather large e-commerce companies, well, eBay continues to extend its decline. Etsy has also got a rather compelling, I think, top formation completion characteristics. Shopify, which provides e-commerce solutions to businesses, is just about steady in the region of its trend mean. Rakuten has collapsed from the impressive peak it put in 2015, and it is also back below its trend mean. What this is beginning to suggest is that there is more going on in terms of consumer sentiment, and that is dragging on some of these e-commerce companies. Well, of course, it's not as if some of the retail brick-and-mortar type companies are in fact doing better. They might even be doing worse. So the clear, I think, message here is that we have to pay attention not only to the TED spread, but also to the health of the U.S. consumer. Now, when we then think about what's going on in terms of the commodity complex, gold prices were a little bit steadier in here today, up about $5, and steadying from around this $1,450 area, and not least because there's a very short-term oversold condition. We still have about a $50 overextension relative to the trend mean. There is the potential that we might just get some additional ranging and that moving average would catch up. The $1,450 area, it also represents the upper side of the range from back in June, July. So it's, I think, a potential area where we may see some support coming through. I pressed the wrong button again there. The silver price also steadied in here today. It's coming back up towards the $17 level. It has unwound the vast majority of its overextension relative to the trend mean. If we do see additional weakness, I'll certainly buy some more. I was rather tempted to buy it in here today, but I thought I would just wait a little while longer. Platinum, on the other hand, is right back in the region of its trend mean, and this continues to look like a consolidation below the psychological $1,000 level. The big point, of course, is it's going to have to hold the region of the trend mean if this is going to continue to be a consolidation. And if it can sustain a move back above 1,000, well, then we have clear confirmation that we are back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. Palladium prices have been pulling back over the course of the last week or two, but we're in positive territory in here today. Certainly we've had a more dynamic series of moves than we've been accustomed to over the last 3-4 months. I do think that there is still plenty of potential for additional consolidation, and there is approximately another $130 that it could pull back and still have a succession of higher reaction lows and be finding support in the region of the trend mean. So there is certainly some additional potential for consolidation there. The Chilean peso was at another new low in here today. When we think about the stress that that is putting on the copper supply market, well, copper was in additional negative territory in here today. It has again pulled back from the region of the trend mean, not in an especially dynamic manner, but certainly enough to confirm at least a pause in the region of the trend mean. And what that is, I think, really confirming is that investors are much more consumed by the demand side of the argument rather than the supply side. The problems that we're seeing in Hong Kong and the weakness that we see in the Chinese economy are, I think, weighing on commodity demand. The Hang Seng was down another nearly 500 points in here today. That's two downward dynamics in a row, or I guess two in 3 days. What that is certainly confirming is near-term resistance in the region of the trend mean. It is all to play for now, whether we're going to see the 26,000 point level hold and the sequence of higher reaction lows over the last 3 months remain intact. Otherwise, it's 25,000, which has been an area of support over much of the last couple of years. But the problem is that I think investors generally had been willing to conclude that the government in Beijing was willing to just sit on the sidelines and wait out the protest movement. What many of them, I think, have concluded is that the peaceful and calm route for protest has not worked, and that was certainly the case earlier in the year with the demands to remove the extrajudicial rendition law. Despite the fact that that now has been removed, it was too little too late from the perspective of protesters who have become progressively more radicalized. That does represent a challenge for the government in Beijing. Now, certainly there are some rather dirty tactics being deployed on both sides here, and the quantity of fake news that is coming through is very difficult to parse. But the violence is certainly something that is incontrovertible, and it does suggest that there is an increasing trend towards potentially introducing martial law in Hong Kong. And that is not something that's priced into the market. And it does represent a rather clear challenge. Then when we think about some of the individual shares, well, Tencent is just about holding on to the lower side of its range. But the bigger point is that the major inconsistency was the huge acceleration in 2017. And since then, it just has not been able to pass muster as a consistent trend. Alibaba is looking to raise approximately $11 billion in a Hong Kong listing. It's not like they are picking a great time to do that. The share had broken out to new recovery highs last week, but it has been in negative territory in here this week. Obviously, the success of Singles Day this year was beneficial to Alibaba, but it was also beneficial to JD.com, and that share has also broken on the upside. What I think is a clear risk is that the situation between China and Hong Kong deteriorates even further, and that it will eventually get priced in as an existential risk. And that does suggest that some of the liquidity that's provided through Hong Kong will impact the rest of the market. So we do have to remain alert to some of the factors that are going on internationally. The A-share market is back below its trend mean. I continue to pay attention to the Shenzhen B-shares. I regard them as something of a lead indicator, certainly an indication of domestic demand. It was in off the low in here today, but still in negative territory. This 900-point level is being defended, but it absolutely needs to do more than that. It needs to sustain a move back above the trend mean to break the sequence of lower rally highs and confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment. In the absence of that, this still looks like a pretty ropey situation. And the renminbi is back above the 7 level and starting to push higher once more. I think that this does represent if we're thinking about where do the risks reside, I think China has got to be front and center in terms of where the risks are. Then the Indian market was in mildly negative territory in here today. Growth disappointed yesterday, and that did act as a headwind for the market. We had a downside Q reversal 3 days ago. We followed through on the downside in here today. That suggests at least some consolidation in the region of that psychological 12,000 level. I think the cut to corporate taxes and the fiscal stimulus are directly aimed at attempting to support growth. And what that suggests is that the surprises are probably still likely to be on the upside. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.